you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
What you're about to hear is the fifth part of an adventure story that takes place deep in the catacombs of Egypt. In Egypt from another dimension. The show is called May His Ka Endure Forever. And it's by the formidable Kevin Valbonesi. If you're new to the Twilight Histories, I highly recommend you go back to part one of this story and get caught up. Before we begin, a shout out to our latest patrons, Menno, David, Adam Howe, and Patrick Barber. I'm thrilled to have you on board, and I hope you're enjoying the backlog of shows we have on Patreon. Thanks to your support and all of the others, we have officially invited Kevin Valbonesi, whose voice you're about to hear, to start contributing shows to Patreon. That means you'll not only get my own shows on Patreon, but also his, so that's a lot more content coming your way next month. Right now, we're reinvesting everything back into the podcast, and that's how we're growing it. So to all the patrons who have been contributing to our growth, and to you fantastic new patrons, thank you. You're making this happen. And now, on to today's show. May His Ka Endure Forever, Part 5, by Kevin Valbonesi.
You float on the surface of a tranquil lake, your eyes turned up toward the magenta sky and the dazzling multitude of stars. You are alone, surrounded only by water and the towering sand dunes which guard the shore. You don't know how long you've been here, but in the absence of pain, hunger, or fear, you feel like you could drift forever. But it is not to be. Ripples form in the water's surface, preceding a rush of bubbles which then turn into a frothing mass beneath you. You're jolted from your repose as the disturbance below kicks up waves. Righting yourself and stroking hard with your arms and legs, you manage to stay afloat. You watch with disbelief as the lake expands, pouring up and over a dune until the mound is gone. Then the waters continue to rush on, stretching out to the horizon. From under the water's surface, two statues rise up, their carven visages facing each other. They are obsidian depictions of the seated pharaoh, clutching a sword and axe in place of his crook and flail. You recognize the sneering face of the twin colossi, rendered with unnatural skill in stone. It's the time-traveling pharaoh. And the very sight of his obsidian avatars sends you into a desperate flight, thrashing your arms and legs about as you try to swim away. But no sooner have you sped away than two more colossi rise up from under the water on either side of you. And then two more, and two more, flanking you like a wicked colonnade, leaving you no course but to continue onward. And you do, swimming with all your might towards a horizon you know you can never reach. Your lungs scream, and your limbs stiffen with every stroke, and soon you're barely paddling along as yet more colossi erupt from their watery slumber to prevent your escape. You stop, doing only enough to stay afloat, resigned to your fate. Ahead of you, the lake gives forth a surging tower of water, and from it emerges a column of great girth, carved with images of the almighty pharaoh. Seated atop the capital is the pharaoh himself, flesh and blood, crowned as the ruler of the two lands. The living god rises from his throne and stands at the edge of the capital, looking down upon your soaked and sorry form. He sneers and waves his hand around as if to wipe away something. You come from afar, traveler, and further shall I cast you away. You shall plunge between the ages without rest, until even time itself has passed away. That is my decree. That is your fate. And with that, a whirlpool opens up beneath you, sucking you down into the dark waters, and to a fate worse, perhaps, than death. You wake up just as water splashes down onto your face. You gasp for air, swinging your arms around. Two shadowy figures seize you, holding you down until your blurry vision becomes crisp once again. Looking up, you see Memnon and a native Egyptian man you don't recognize. The two of them slowly release you from their grasp and back off. An Egyptian woman approaches, holding a bowl full of water. She gestures towards you, but the Egyptian man waves her off. Memnon helps you sit up, and only then do you realize that you're in a cramped clay hut, the door open onto a field of wheat beyond. You can just about make out the sound of running water. A river, perhaps. Memnon takes the bowl of water from the woman and offers it to you. You must drink. You don't need to be told a second time. You snatch the bowl of water from Memnon and gulp it down, nearly choking as you do. The man offers you a piece of bread, and you inhale it faster than you did the water.
Slow down, friend. I did not save your life just for you to choke on a morsel of bread.
His words pierce through your nagging hunger and thirst. What happened? You ask.
We were in the desert, and then...
You did a good thing, and because of it, I had enough strength to drag us to the nearest road. Luckily, this man and his slaves came upon us.
You nod to the man in gratitude, and he nods back. He and his wife collect their things and step out, leaving you and Memnon with a fresh bowl of water and some more bread.
I told them we had been set upon by bandits, Memnon whispers. Fortunately for us, their farm is still some distance from Thebes. I have seen no soldiers or royal officials yet.
You ponder your situation between bites of bread. You're safe, for now. There's food, but hardly enough to restore you to full strength. And you have nothing left. No tools, no money, no treasure to make it all worthwhile. What then are you to do? You can't stay out here forever. Maybe the Pharaoh and his men don't come for you, but then what? Your accomplice back in the future won't keep the doorway open forever. And then there's Memnon. What happens to his family in the city? Really? There is only one course of action. Get back to Thebes. Is there an easy way back into the city?
No. Every gate is guarded, and merchants have their goods inspected by the royal assessors.
All right. Then this has to be done under cover of darkness.
The guards will still be there.
Yes, but at least we'll have better odds. The question then is how to use our poor cover to get in. Even if we get disguises, they'll see your wounds and mark me as a foreigner right away. So we have to find a vulnerability in the walls. You try to recall the shape of Thebes' circuit walls, but specific details escape you. I need to stretch my legs.
You get up with some difficulty, and with Memnon's help, you walk out of the hut and into the bright midday sun. You are indeed on a farmstead. Your savior is cultivating wheat in the marshy lands around the Nile. Thousands of stalks of emmer are swaying back and forth in the gentle breeze as slaves go about with their tools, reaping this year's harvest. Nearby, the River Nile runs its course, fairly wide, separating this farmstead from another of more considerable size on the opposite banks. Taking shelter under a few palm trees at the river's edge, you breathe in the fresh air and settle in. This may not be a manicured grove in the heart of the city, but it's equally tranquil. Looking around, you see the scene upon which Egyptian civilization was forged. The life-giving Nile flows by, depositing rich silt, which the dedicated farmers turn into a multitude of grains and other goods. It has always been like this, and it always will be. Egypt is the Nile. Memnon, what will you do if we can get back into the city? It'll never be safe for you again.
I had not thought about it, to be honest. Where will I go? Pharaoh's hand stretches further than even the horizon.
This empire is vast, yes, but the world is bigger, Memnon.
How do you know? How far away is your country?
Oh, it's very far away. I've come from so far away that this land is barely whispered of, let alone feared. And the ruler of these lands? Not a word.
Still, how can I travel so far? With my grandfather alone, it will be a journey of years at least.
Better to travel a year than live just one more day. Memnon gets up and wades into the shallow waters of the Nile. He reaches down and scoops up some water, splashing his face with it.
We will have to manage at least one more day. We will see what happens after that.
Memnon splashes his face again.
At least the journey will be easy. We can follow the river, and it will take us right to the city.
Yes. Yes, it will. You spring to your feet, regretting it instantly as your body aches. Still, the excitement helps you press on. You smile at Memnon, and he understands the reason for your mirth right away. Looking down at the river around him, his eyes grow wide.
There are crocodiles and hippos.
Well, just swim faster than them. Memnon shakes his head, throws his hands up in the air. Oh, come on. At least we won't die of thirst.
The walled city of Thebes is a formidable sight, even in the dying light of Ra's golden disk. Its main gates are flanked by pylons several tens of feet in height, outstretching only the walls themselves, which rise up like sheer cliffs, their circuit interrupted only by the occasional tower. And those walls are well guarded. Egyptian soldiers and royal assessors march up and down the approaches to the city, inspecting every cart, chariot, and passerby. You lay in the reeds at the edge of the river, patiently waiting for the sun to set. Memnon kneels next to you, watching the surface of the water. Are we all clear, Memnon?
Just because I don't see anything does not mean that there are no crocodiles. They are cunning beasts.
Then we go now. Once the sun sets completely, we'll be paddling around in total darkness. We'll have a feast then if we're still here. You crouch down in the reeds with Memnon and look carefully at the river. Nothing.
Your eyes then follow the flow of the river down its banks and over to a small archway under which the river passes. Water pouring over, through, and around several iron bars which form a gate. Check the river again, and then the nearest city gate. The soldiers and assessors are still about their business, inspecting people's goods with greater vigor in the fading light. Striking out from the weeds, you and Memnon sink down, holding the heads of papyrus reeds next to your own, doing your best to look like dead plants caught in the current. You move your free arm and legs only enough to keep your nostrils above water. Luckily, you're not far from the city walls, and the current is strong enough to carry you there, but not enough to pull you under. You pass under the archway and bump into the iron gate without incident. Tossing the reeds aside, you inspect the gate, judging how easily you can pull yourself through one of the spaces between the bars. You pull aside the mushy remains of plants caught against the bars to try and widen the available gap. It looks like a small man might just squeeze through. You wonder if your recent bout of starvation might have made you thin enough. Pulling yourself up, you manage to squeeze into the opening at great cost to your shoulders. The calcified iron bars scrape your skin. Worse, you cease to make progress, finding yourself stuck around your chest. Memnon, I need you to push me. And without hesitating, Memnon does. You bite down on your tongue to stifle a scream as your exposed flesh scrapes against the bars until you drop down into the water on the other side. Recovering, you pull strips of cloth from your tunic with some difficulty and tie them around the worst scrapes. Turning to the gate, you see Memnon already pulling himself through the opening in the bars. You notice that as he is much thinner than you, he passes through with barely a scratch. You can't decide if you should feel guilty or annoyed. Once Memnon is clear of the gate, you kick off from it and swim down the vaulted chamber, carrying the water to Thebes' many canals. In the distance, the chamber gives way to the city's main canal and the streets through which it runs. You stop near the edge of the chamber and look for anyone walking along the canal. There are a few residents milling about in the late hours of the day, and a handful of guards patrolling further up the street. Sighting a nearby alleyway, you signal to Memnon and kick off again, pulling yourselves out of the canal and hurrying into the alleyway before anyone notices. Corners, you find that the alleys in all directions are short, so cover will be minimal. And you are keenly aware of your drenched and bloodied clothing as well. How far to your place, Memnon?
It's an hour's walk from here at least.
There's no way we'll make it that long undisturbed. You think about the space where you first arrived, and you wonder how far away it is. You wonder how lucky you might be if you ran there now. Would your co-conspirator open the doorway? Could you hold out there until he did? Would it be a few hours? Days? Would you be so willing to forsake Memnon again? No, you can't. At least, not until he's safe with his own people. You owe him at least that. We'll have to risk it then. It'll be dark soon. That's about as much cover as we're gonna get.
Do you think they're looking for us here?
I don't know. Our best hope is that they think we're still underground or dead in the desert. Either way, we can't waste time. You lead the way. You and Memnon steel yourselves for the challenge ahead. Getting into Thebes might just have been the easy part. With an entire metropolis to cross, safety is indeed a distant shore. Your journey across Thebes may prove as long as your trek through the desert. When the sun's final rays of light retreated beneath the horizon, the darkness which followed was deep. It's a new moon, so the only light by which you and Memnon now find your way is from the distant stars or the occasional flicker of a lamp from within a home or temple. But even then, not all lights beckon you to advance safely. Soldiers patrol around, carrying torches. More than once, you and Memnon have had to dive for cover, often behind a building or in one of the many manicured groves around the city. You find yourself in this position once again, as you and Memnon wade into a pond within a grove, sinking down just enough to keep your noses clear of the water. Up ahead, a troop of some 10 Egyptian soldiers march about, not seeming particularly urgent in their manner. In fact, instead of quickly moving on as you'd hoped, they stop and stand around, grumbling about their lot in life. You and Memnon do everything in your power to stay silent, moving your arms and legs just enough to stay above water. The soldiers share nuts, roasted coffee beans, and their rations of wine, and they bellyache about getting the night shift. One man grumbles about the superior sticking them with the night patrol because they got caught dozing off in the day. Another chimes in and claims that they only got stuck with their duty now because of some disturbance after the ceremony in the valley. Yet another tells his comrades to suck it up, because they're not the only ones out on patrol. It's their job, and it's better than fighting the Asiatics out east. Everyone nods in agreement, and they finally move on. You and Memnon remain partially submerged until the glimmer of the patrol's torches fades in the distance. Rising from the water, you take a deep breath. Well, that confirms it at least. Their superiors don't know we're in the city. It should make getting your family out of here a little simpler.
Do you think it can be done tonight?
It has to be. Now, let's get going. We can't be that much further, right?
It's not close, but it's not that far either.
You and Memnon exit the grove and run for the nearest narrow street. You move quickly, hugging the walls of nearby buildings. You cover significant ground, though you worry that you'll be punished for this brisk pace. And you don't even know if you're going the right way. But then, the pungent aroma of the spice market greets your flaring nostrils. Slipping into a nearby alleyway, you strain to see any sign of a patrol. There's hardly a light, save for a few flickering in the apartments above the various shops. Memnon steps out ahead of you and hurries over to the coffee house where you first met him. The door's closed, locked, in fact. Memnon bangs on the door. You run over and grab his wrist to dissuade him from doing that again, but he just bangs on the door with his free hand.
Baba! Baba, it's Memnon. Open the door.
Memnon continues banging on the door. You have half a mind to knock him out cold if he won't stop causing such a ruckus.
He's not awake, Memnon. Leave it.
But Memnon keeps banging on the door and shouting. You hear footsteps. A group's footsteps.
Memnon, shut up. We have to go.
But he won't. You wrap an arm around his neck, determined to choke him out. But just then, the door opens, and Memnon's grandfather looks at you both in awe. The footsteps draw closer, So you shove Memnon past his grandfather and into the coffee house, closing the door behind you. You signal for everyone to remain quiet as the footsteps outside give way to hushed tones. Whoever's out there paces about. They whisper among themselves. You wait for a long time as they search the area. But eventually, their chatter stops. They run off, giving you the freedom to let out a deep sigh.
My boy. Memnon's grandfather looks shocked, if only for a moment.
He gives his grandson a pat on the face, then a squeeze. Satisfied that his boy is really there, the old man shuffles into another room.
Sit down, boys. Make yourself comfortable. Baba, we don't have time. You need to gather your things.
Do you know what hour it is?
Sit. Relax. I will make coffee.
You peer around the corner and find the old man doing just that, grinding beans with a pestle and mortar. He's slow, working on tiny bundles of beans. And at this rate, it'll take him all night to make 3 cups. You step in and give the old man a hand. I've got it. You go pack the old man's things. Memnon throws his hands up, grumbles to himself. But eventually, he jogs up the stairs and goes about clearing the place out. Get me some fresh robes while you're up there. Memnon's grandfather leaves you to the beans and begins to prepare a small fire. He sets a bronze cup into a wireframe suspended over the growing embers. He then looks around, opening jars in search of water.
I see you did indeed come back with something valuable.
How's that, old man?
You have your life. I told you it is a wicked place. I see my grandson suffered for your folly as well.
That's his own fault. He got caught. It would have just been my head on the chopping block otherwise.
And now, my head may roll from my body as well. That's why that foolish boy is trying to rush me out of here, isn't it?
You nod, looking at your pile of coffee grinds. The old man nods and takes them from you. He mixes the grinds in with water from a small jar, bringing everything to a slow boil in the bronze cup.
Do you still have the gold you promised?
No. No. I lost everything.
So now you intend to live off of us? We, who are about to be fugitives?
No. I have my own way out of the city. I'm going home.
So you will abandon us then?
It's not like that, old man. Your grandson saved my life. I repaid him by getting him here safely. That's the best I can do for either of you.
I knew your kind from the moment you walked through our door. Consider this cup the last thing you will ever get from me.
The old man uses a rag to grab the bronze cup by its handle and pour its steaming contents into a few clay cups nearby. Just as the coffee hits the last cup, Memnon comes down with several sacks in hand. He hands you a bundle of cloth from within one. That'll have to do. You take the cloth with a nod. Memnon's grandfather places a steaming cup of coffee in your hands, and in Memnon's.
May the gods see us upon our way. Show us the clear and shining path to a better life.
Memnon's grandfather raises his cup in a reverent salute, then downs the contents. You sip the boiling brew, reinvigorated by the smell and the potent properties of this pure bean. Your strength, so recently sapped by the ordeals the last few days, returns to you in full force. Finished, you set your cup down and quickly change your robes, caring little for the blushes of your company. You use your old robes to wipe down whatever part of you is still wet or bloody, and then toss them aside. You turn to Memnon, fixing your eyes on his. You search for the words. What you manage isn't much, but you hope it's enough. For what it's worth, Memnon. Thank you. But a moment passes as you and Memnon lock eyes. Then, without another word, you step out and onto the quiet streets of Thebes. You march onward down the side streets of Thebes, searching desperately for the building where you first arrived in this strange land. It was nondescript, unremarkable by choice. No one would think to look there as you hoarded your stolen goods and awaited your ride back. But now, the blandness of the stonework and out-of-way location complement the darkness in frustrating your search. It's already been hours since you left the spice market, and you feel no closer to making good your escape. Or still, the number of patrols has increased, costing you precious minutes. Even if the soldiers don't know your face, they won't take kindly to a strange foreigner wandering in the dark. There will be no holding up in that building for days either without supplies, and it's likely that you'll be accosted immediately upon entering the main markets during the day. Every minute more you spend in this world, the closer you are to being discovered and deprived of your life. You are so lost in thinking of how likely your end will be that you don't immediately take notice of the most curious sound growing in the distance. It begins as an indistinct rumble, perhaps just a strong gale or some distant stone gates yawning. But no, the sound is persistent and grows louder with every passing second. Soon, it's too much to ignore. You snap to attention and dive behind a column as you find yourself in the heart of Thebes. Peering out from your cover, you witness the multitudes gathering up ahead. Soldiers gather at the far end of the central square, forming up on either side of the opposite entrance. You recognize the way ahead in the flickering light of hundreds of torches held aloft. It's the way to the Valley of the King. And sooner than you recognize the way, do you find its travelers this evening. A procession marches toward the center of the city, led by masked acolytes of Kemet's pantheon. Anubis, Thoth, Bastet, Sobek, Set, and Horus all march in lockstep, raising palm fronds and torches high above their heads. The beasts of Egypt advance in solemn silence, save for the rumble of their feet on the ground. As the masked men enter the square, they too take up positions on either side. They kneel, and those holding palm fronds wave them up and down. Straining your eyes, you attempt to make out the contours of some massive bulk in the distance. You don't have to trouble yourself for long. The familiar form catches the torchlight with its gleaming golden facade. Held aloft on a platform, itself supported by dozens of men bracing poles on their shoulders. The pharaoh's sarcophagus stands upright, its ivory gaze fixed ahead, perhaps on you. Arriving in the center, the attendants set down the platform and the sarcophagus with it. The masked acolytes surround the sarcophagus and bow down towards it. One among their number removes his mask and approaches the sarcophagus, laying a hand on the inset jewels. Turning to the gathered crowd, this devotee reveals himself to you. It's the High Priest. The Pharaoh's right-hand man stretches his arms out to the gathered crowd.
Go forth and summon the people. Tell them to rejoice, for the great king will return this night.
That was May His Ka Endure Forever, Part 5 by Kevin Valbenesi. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Patreon area has grown to the point where we can now bring on Kevin to produce monthly shows just for patrons. So now, not only are you going to have Kevin creating shows for you on the podcast feed, but you'll also have a monthly show from him in Patreon. That's in addition to my own shows, which I'm doing exclusively for patrons right now. For Kevin's first Patreon show, I'm going to leak it to you, you're going to get something to do with Rome. I'm not sure what it's going to be just yet, whether futuristic, steampunk, dystopian, or something else, but I have a feeling it's going to be good. I'm really excited to see where Kevin's imagination takes us. If you want to hear that story, come on over and join the club at Patreon. There are over 40 shows in the backlog, ready to download. Plus, you'll get to hear my own ongoing show called Blue Dragons, and next month, Kevin's new show on Rome. Go to twilighthistories.com for more details. That's twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.